ring if you're ready to care. Let the podcast begin. Oh, let's talk power, let's talk speed. Hosted by the one and only We Too Deep. Turn it up loud, feel the power in your seat. This is Slappin' Neat, yeah, Slappin' Neat.
What is up, everybody? It is your boy We Too Deep, and we are back with another surprise episode. One that was sort of last minute. I know you guys weren't expecting to hear my voice until August 1st, in 11 days. But we're after watching Slammiversary last night, and seeing the show, enjoying the show, and then having the ending, I really didn't make my mind to do a review show until the end result of the show. And that is going to be part of the discussion, right? So I do want to review the show because I thought it was really good. And we're going to talk about a couple of things. We'll go through the show. We'll break it down. And then we're going to talk about some other topics revolving around TNA. You know, the conversations that are being had. Is WWE calling the shots? And you know, celebrating their success last night and talking about, like, was what they did last night a failure, as I've heard so many fans say in the build-up to Slammiversary. We'll discuss that. We'll discuss everything TNA. Right? This is going to be a very TNA-centric episode. It's also our 300th episode of the podcast, so we are going to take a minute to celebrate that and just thank all of the listeners, who any single person who has listened one time over the last 300 episodes. Thank you. But I want to give special thanks to the core group who have been with me for years at this point. I mean, we're talking almost 3.5 years at this point of putting in, you know, hours of work to get what I would consider some of the best wrestling podcast content out there. You can go and listen to the big names who've been in the business, and they can listen to their stories, right? But remove them of the opinionated content creators, the ones who just do their opinions on the show. I believe this one right here, the Slappin' Mead Wrestling Podcast, a little biased, but I believe it's the best. There's no flash. There's no gimmick. There's no, you know, I'm not trying to play into a persona. It's just me, right? And for 300 episodes, thank you to every single person who has watched and has stuck along for the journey. Hopefully, this hard work gets rewarded at some point. But here's to 300, and here's to the next 300 as we continue to put in this work. But enough of that, right? We're gonna celebrate something else, and that is TNA. And so before we even break down the show, I want to talk about a couple things going on, some conversations going on. So the official attendance was just over 7,600 people, which is the biggest TNA show event, live event, ever held. And we can argue who was the weight that a lot of those tickets sold. Because a lot of people say, well, that's just the drawing power of AJ Styles. Well, absolutely. That's why you bring him back. But I don't want to take away from the drawing power that Trick Williams had prior to the AJ Styles announcement. Before Trick Williams won the title, they had only had like 2,500 sold, right? In the month and a half between Trick Williams winning the title and AJ Styles being announced, they had moved, I believe it was 1,800 tickets, or excuse me, they had moved about 1,000 tickets, and they had opened another 1,000 tickets to be sold, meaning that there was a high demand for tickets that they could open more. So in the process, let me get the actual numbers that I had up here. Since Trick Williams was champion on May 25th at Battleground, TNA Slammiversary sold 1,800 tickets and opened an extra 1,000 seats, meaning essentially he had a total ticket impact. Not that this is a stat that people care, this is a stat that I'm trying to use. He had a total ticket impact of about 2,800 tickets. Right? And if you look at the amount of tickets post Trick Williams winning the title, they had only sold 2,800 tickets. And before the the AJ Styles announcement, you had just about 4,000 sold, right? So I don't want to lessen the effect that Trick Williams had on the show. But the other side of this conversation that a lot of people are having, and when I say a lot of people, I'm saying AEW fans, because this is what I want to call it. This is the main thing I want to call out, right? These AEW fans who always have to have a whataboutism, right? Have been sitting here and saying, well, you're only put 7,000, 7,600 in a 20,000 seat arena. You only sold 40% of the arena. Well, that's not the point, right? Like, WWE rented out State Farm for Evolution and only sold 6,800, I believe it was. Like, that's not the point. You don't, you use a big arena, and then you sell what you know you can, sell, and then you dress the arena up, you make the production, you actually have a production team that cares about production. Because what the whataboutism is they say, well, what about the times when AEW used to rent the bigger arenas and could only have, you know, only fit? I said, yeah, but the problem is you had no one on the hard cam, and so you would scroll to the hard cam side or pan to the hard cam side during the show, and it would be empty. It's not about the amount of fans in the 20,000-seat arena. It's the fact that you rented a 20,000-seat arena and only put 2,000 people in it. Right? Like, there's no comparison here. Right? Like everyone's trying to knock what TNA did because, and this is what is funny, right? These same fans that were TNA fans and we're cheering for TNA, but the second that the partnership became official and they partnered with WWE, now we have some big problem. We can't support TNA. We can't cheer their success anymore because they're affiliated with WWE, and that is the type of tribalism that is toxic, right? You don't have to like TNA's product. I tend to believe that TNA, with this partnership, before the partnership, already had a very good roster, solid roster, and a solid product. But with the partnership, just being able to expand their talent base and create these stories, is exciting. And I think since the partnership, I think the roster they have now of TNA superstars, Mustafa Ali, Cedric Alexander, Indy Hartwell, Tessa Blanchard, Moose, the Nemeths, First Class, all the, you know, the Rascals, this roster that they have, and I can go on naming rosters and like the roster, but this roster they have now, I'm going to say it, is the best roster TNA has had in a while. The talent level here, Leon Slater, we'll talk about him when we go over the show. It's insane for any wrestling fan. If you are a wrestling fan, you should have tuned into TNA Slammiversary last night. And you should have celebrated the success of a company that has been grinding for 30 years or close to it. About 25, 26. Been grinding for close to 30 years. And has been doing their thing and has had a lot of history on their biggest show ever. But instead, you got people on social media critiquing the partnership and the WWE's the one calling the shots. Instead of just enjoying the show. But they're the same ones that when you mention one critique on Tony Khan, well, man, if you don't like it, you don't have to watch it. They don't. If you don't like it, man, that's just don't watch it. Just let everyone enjoy what they want to watch. Okay, well, why don't you put that same message into action? And just, if you don't want to watch TNA, that's fine. But going on, you know, social medias and complaining about the partnership and acting like the show was bad when it, right? This is just this is the reason that fans like me may not necessarily be casual, but fans like me, we stop paying attention to AEW. It's the fan base. The product AEW puts out is not bad. I'm just going to throw that out there, right? The product that AEW puts out there isn't the reason I'm not watching AEW. The reason I'm not watching AEW is the fans, right? On two metrics, right? The fans who the fans, the sickos who want to gatekeep their product and won't let the new fans experience it, right, without, and won't allow any critique of the product, right? So, like, imagine, like, the first time you ever had, you know, let's say, let's use me, for example, right? I live in North Carolina. We just got a Whataburger, the Texas chained brand. Here in North Carolina, we have, I think we've opened like three in the last 6 months. But the first one that opened, it's like 2 hours away from my house, right? I made a 2 hour trip to this restaurant, sat in a line for about 2 hours, right, to order Whataburger just to try it out, first time, right? Ordered, there was a shopping center like across the street. Went to go eat, right? And it was just, it was mid to me. Like, it wasn't the experience that I was being told it was, right? Now if there was some Whataburger apologist out there in the middle of bumfuck Texas that hears me say that and says, oh, man, you just don't understand it. No, let me experience it for the first time. And critique the product. Same thing with AEW, right? Let me experience the product and let me offer suggestions and offer my opinion without having to feel like I have to just force myself, right, to enjoy the product. Because the product's decent. Like, it's not bad. There's parts of AEW that's just god-awful. The lack of selling, the lack of focus on, not that there's no storyline, because everyone, the AEW fans misinterpret what I'm saying, right? Not that there's no storylines, because there's definitely some storylines they're telling, but they're very shallow, and the lack of depth in the storytelling and the lack of information, basic information, who, what, why, where, and how on some of these characters, that's what turns me away from it, right? But let me experience the product. And if you don't like it, that's fine. If you didn't like Slammiversary last night, that's fine. But there's a difference between saying, hey, I did not like the product, and then saying, well, man, I... And then there's a difference between saying I didn't like the product personally, but congratulations on your success, and saying you're partnered with WWE, therefore I'm going to critique your success, I'm going to downplay your success, and then I'm going to say your product is awful solely because there's a WWE partnership. That right there is just stupid, and it's petty, and it's toxic. That's the toxic wrestling fandom we have to remove from the industry and from the business, right? Absolutely, you can critique the show. There were moments of that show that I didn't necessarily enjoy. 100%. But I still think the show was wonderful. I still think that the stories coming in and coming out of Slammiversary and where we're headed towards Bound for Glory, and you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I watch TNA every week, but I might start. You know, I bought the annual plan at least for the next year. I might cancel it. My hope was, okay, let's get the annual plan. Now I can watch all the shows, all the PLEs. And my hope is within the next 6 months to a year before this thing goes dead, that they're going to be on network television, whether it's the CW or something that I don't have the annual subscription for. Because I'm fine paying $40 a pay-per-view. I am. And I'm not going to sit there and watch all their little Friday specials. I'm just not. I don't. So I'll put it this way, right? WWE definitely still has precedence, right, over my wrestling fandom. They are the top dog. And when you have a show on at the same time as a WWE product, probably not going to watch it. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm hoping one of these, within the next 6 months, TNA has a television contract where Impact can be shown live without me having to pay for it on TNA Plus, right? But with that, the last thing I want to talk about, we're talking about paying, right? And so I didn't mind paying for the show last night. Now, I understand people being apprehensive saying, I don't want to pay for a show because I don't want to feel like I wasted my money and the show not be good. Completely understand that. What I really dislike, and it's not just wrestling fans, but it's MMA fans, it's but mainly it's wrestling fans, because I don't know any other industry outside of wrestling that still does, like, pay-per-views, right? And so, I just, one thing that just really irks me, I'm just going to be honest with you, and I'm going to be out, I'll just put it this way, if the shoe fits, you got to wear it. If you've ever said to anybody, yo, what's the link to watch this for free? If you've ever tried to pirate these shows, if you ever tried to, I'm sorry, I lose a little bit of, can I be honest, there's a little bit of respect for anyone that would try to steal the work that these people are putting in. Because that's what you're doing. That's exactly what you're doing. You're trying to steal the product and the hard work of TNA. Look, I understand not everyone has $50 to pay for a pay-per-view, or $40, whatever it was. I completely understand that. With that being said, I also think if you don't buy the product, you don't get to enjoy the product. It's just plain and simple, right? That's just basic, right? I'm not a big fan of these wrestling fans coming out here and trying to pirate these shows. Pay for your wrestling. Support the wrestlers. You're taking money out of the company's hands when you're doing this, right? Because they're producing this by themselves. They have no backing, right? They're hosting it. They got to pay the camera guys. They got to pay the service that can even hold them hosting the show. The servers that even air it, right? They got to pay for all of that. They got to pay production guys. They got to pay the wrestlers. There's a lot of things that the pay-per-view buys pay for. And by you trying to get the product for free, I'm sorry, I don't have a lot of respect for that. I don't. And it's one thing, I was tempted to be like, let me see if I could, I could hook up my computer to my TV and see, I have the thing that I use to record WWE 2K, see if I can hook that up and, screen share on Discord. Then I thought about it, I'm like, well, that's pirating the show. There's no incentive for anyone else in the Discord to buy the product if I'm just going to show it to them. It's illegal, first off. And so, absolutely not. Don't ever ask. I'm never gonna screen share. A lot of these apps don't even allow you to screen share anymore. But I'll never screen share a PLE, It sucks because I'm the same way. Like, if I didn't have the money, yeah, it would suck if I couldn't watch Slammiversary. But it is just what it is. Like, I until they get a deal like WWE does with Peacock, excuse me, like, you're just going to have to buy the pay-per-views. And it sucks. $40 four times a year, you know, is a lot of money. But there's no logical argument you can use to me as to why we should respect anyone that would try to pirate a show. No disrespect to anyone in the audience. There's a little bit of respect lost because you're stealing the hard work of all of this talent and all of the workers putting the show on. You're essentially saying, well, I deserve to watch this for free. No, you don't. That's not how business works, right? It's like walking into, you know, a restaurant and being like, I can't afford this, but I deserve to eat. Right, but sir, this is Outback, and this is premium. I mean, premium in that it's steak, right, and it's. This is Ruth Chris. You deserve to eat, but you don't deserve to eat at Ruth Chris if you don't have $100 to pay for your steak. Right? You see what I'm saying? You deserve to know what's going on in TNA, but if you can't afford to watch it, not trying to sound, because I'm broke as a shit, dude. I really am. Like, I understand the struggle. But if you aren't willing to pay for the product, you don't get to watch the product. That's sort of how I view it. Anyway, enough of that. Let's talk about the show. Let's break it down. So we start with the pre-show. We have Ash by Elegance, Heller by Elegance, the Elegance brand, defending their championships against the Inspiration. Elegance brand wins by there was a distraction, right? Yeah, there was a distraction and some interference leading to the finisher. And the Elegance brand defeats the Inspiration in what I'm going to assume is the start of a long-term story. TNA has this thing, and we'll talk about this more in the main event, where they love long-term pushes for their baby faces. And so this might be a Bound for Glory situation where the Inspiration will win it at Bound for Glory, but we'll see. Eric Young and the Northern Armory came out and they faced the Hometown Man. I think the Hometown Man gimmick is just hilarious. I don't necessarily, you know, I think the pre-show is what it looks for. Like, that's all it deserves to be. It shouldn't be, like, on the main card. Essentially, for those who don't know, the Hometown Man, that's literally the wrestler's name. And every town they're in is his hometown. Basically, he's just there to get the crowd excited. Right, impromptu match where the Hometown Man gets the victory. We then have Steve Macklin, Jake Something, and Mance Warner versus Enzo Amore going by Real One, Zilla Fatu, and Josh Bishop. I said Bishop Dyer on the prediction show. Completely forgot about that Josh Bishop was a part of this thing. I completely forgot about him. But yeah, so it was Josh Bishop. So Enzo comes down, does his normal shtick. It's still funny, still entertaining to me. He's still good on the mic, right? Zilla is 25 years old, probably the best in the bloodline, like, right now. It was cool to see him here. because I've never really watched Zilla wrestle. He was good. And Team Zilla Fatu, Enzo, and Josh Bishop got the win. And they were representing West Side Guns promotion. I can't think of it's Fourth Rope, I think is what it's called. And it was so, you know, there's a third tier to this partnership because they're partnering with TNA as well. But they're Fourth Rope is essentially in the position TNA is with NXT, where, you know, Fourth Rope can lend some of their roster to TNA the same way that TNA's lending some roster, right? And so now we have, like, depth to this developmental system here, depth to this partnership that TNA's putting itself in. And so that's fun. That's fun. The main card, we start off with National Anthem, which was done pretty well, right? One of the better ones that I've heard. But we start off with Mustafa Ali versus Cedric Alexander. I thought this match was very good, especially like the last 5 minutes of it. Very good, but what else to expect, right? And that finish was crazy. Cedric Alexander hits Tasha Steele with the lumbar check, which may have been the best ever delivered lumbar check I've ever seen Cedric do. I think he did one on the Indies to Candice LeRae, and that one was really good too. Tasha Steele sold this like crazy. She launched into the air, sold it like crazy. As soon as the lumbar check gets hit, though, Mustafa hits a 450, and Mustafa gets the win. His first ever win against Cedric Alexander. Again, this is probably a long-term feud. Part of me wonders if Cedric can get his wife, Ariel Monroe, or Big Swole for those AEW fans out there who they don't talk about her no more because she complained about the company. But if we can get her involved in TNA, that would be fun to sort of counter Tasha Steele. That would be fun. We then turn into The System, teaming with Matt Cardona to face Dark State. And what was honestly not that good of a match. It was all right. There was action, but that's to be expected in an 8-man tag. I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest fan of these multi-person, like when there's 8 people in the ring and we know brawls are going to happen, I just lose focus because I don't know what to focus on, right? And so it was an okay match. The System winning kind of threw me off, but it makes sense considering future results of the other matches. But The System gets the win here. Part of me is wondering, like, what are we doing with Dark State as an NXT fan? Because anytime Dark State's in a match, it feels like they're losing. Right? They can come out here and attack people all day long, but if you're not going to win in the matches, like, I don't take you seriously. And it kind of is. Deion Lennox is great. Osiris Griffin is great. Cutler James made a lot of progression since being on LFG. And Saquon Sugars is my dude. Like, I watched him come through the indies here in North Carolina. Like, that's my dude. I'm going to support him no matter what. And so, like, I want better for Dark State. I really do. I thought when this first started, it was a really interesting idea, but I just don't think it's being utilized properly. We get an interview with Gia Miller, with some dude from 90 Day Fiancé. Don't really care about this, to be honest with you. We go forward to Tessa Blanchard versus Indy Hartwell in a decent match. I'm not going to say it was bad. A decent match. Um, Indy ends up picking up the win. And then, as a result, Gia Miller goes to interview Indy and gets attacked by Tessa. Or Indy gets attacked by Tessa. Gia Miller tried to intervene. Tessa Blanchard then attacked Gia Miller, smashed her head against the stairs. It wasn't a bad segment. Now, for those who don't know, Gia Miller did used to wrestle on the indies. So it could lead to, you know, and what I'm thinking it's going to happen. And they sort of teased this on the pre-show where Gia Miller was like, I have bias, so I'm going to stay out of my predictions here. They've sort of teased this sort of beatdown happening. I think what we're going to get is Tessa and Victoria Crawford, or Alicia Fox for you WWE fans. Tessa and Victoria Crawford versus Gia Miller and Indy Hartwell. I think we're going to get that at the Baltimore show. I think it's called Emergence. I could be wrong. And I think that's going to be the big match. Santino announced that Tessa was to be removed by security, and later on down the night that she was suspended indefinitely. The winner takes all match, Masha Slamovic versus JC Jane. I thought was really fun. Good match. When I made my predictions on Friday, I told you I had originally picked Masha, but I had a gut feeling that morning to switch to JC Jane, that something just told me JC Jane was winning, and I'm glad I did that. JC Jane does pick up the win after a really good match. You know, you get Fatal Influence on the outside. You have Zaya Brookside and Laying Lee run down to sort of even the odds. They get taken out back, or they get going through the crowd. They're gone. They're not a part of the show anymore. Then JC Jane hits Rolling Encore and wins. And this is where the AEW fans, like, I told you WWE was going to do this. They're going to steal the titles. You know, you can, guys, shut up. This is right. And so there's questions like, why is JC getting this push? Why has she got the rocket strap? Guys, I need people to understand a little bit about story. Right? Is JC Jane the best in her group? Probably not. Fallon Henley is probably better. Now, I'm not willing to say that yet. Maybe it's because I'm biased. But I like JC Jane. I do. I thought JC Jane was better than Gigi. And I thought she was the best in Toxic Attraction, because Mandy Rose really offered was a sex appeal. But JC Jane could offer a sex appeal and can actually wrestle. And I think she's decent on the mic. I don't understand the hate for JC Jane, I'm going to be honest with you. I really just don't understand it. I knew from the first time I saw her, as she went by her indie name, Avery Taylor, when I saw her back in 2018 on the indies, I knew that was the first time I ever seen her. She had probably been wrestling for a year or two at that point. And I said to myself, she's going to make it. Like, I knew she was going to be a star. I'm happy for it, right? Again, we immediately try to take away the celebration of someone who, I mean, how long was she in NXT for under Mandy Rose? And like, 2 years doing that. And then another, like, 2 years once Mandy left and Toxic Attraction broke up, of her playing the mid-card and going and teaming with Thea and then forming Fatal Influence and still sort of playing the mid-card. For her to finally get this, to get a push and to get the flowers that she deserves for playing along, I think part of this is just being at the right place at the right time. But ultimately, what I think this is, if you got to understand how they're building J.C. Jayne, they're building J.C. Jayne as this unstoppable heel so that either one of two things are going to happen. She's going to get turned on by Toxic. Because here's what I think happens. I think Blake Monroe is going to... She's obviously going to be the heel in the faction. I think Blake Monroe is going to be one of these people who steal away Fatal Influence one by one. Right? And they turn on JC, making JC the babyface. And now she has sympathy. Ultimately leading to... I think Blake Monroe is going to win the NXT championship. But also, you're setting up someone like an Indy Hartwell to come over to NXT and win the title back to bring it back to TNA. You're maybe setting up someone like Tessa to bring it back. But ultimately, what you're doing is you got to understand what's happening. You're trying to get a TV deal. And if you could say, well, our champions are already on TV in NXT, and we have this partnership with WWE, and we use their superstars, they can use ours. Now you benefit, right? I think J.C. Jayne deserves the push. I think it's going to be part of a bigger, either a big turn, or I think what could even be better is you're building up this unstoppable villain for some baby face to come in. The best heroes need a very, very strong villain, right? And so you build up this villain for a hero to come in, whether it's Indy Hartwell or whether it's Tessa, or I highly doubt it will be Tessa, but whoever it is, for them to come in and win the title, right? I like this decision. I really do. We then move to the X Division, Moose versus Leon Slater. This is match of the night. 100%. This was the match of the night to me. Leon Slater wins, youngest X Division champion of all time for TNA. As soon as Leon Slater wins the match, AJ Styles comes out and puts over Leon Slater better than I have seen anyone put over anybody, right? Not only is AJ Styles like the greatest TNA wrestler of all time, right? He comes over, he comes out, and they use him perfectly to put over their up-and-coming young 20-year-old superstar. If you're Leon Slater, you have a rocket on your back now. The company just gave you their title as the youngest champion ever. And the greatest to ever do it in that company just put you over. Leon Slater is the face of TNA right now. That's another key point. AJ Styles does come out with his TNA music, which pleased the internet, which is good, because God forbid he came out to, they don't want none, they don't want none. Everyone would have been pissed. Tag team ladder match. Hardys end up winning. Not my favorite result, personally. It was a fun match, though. Again, with it being a four-team ladder match, there's so much going on, it's really hard for me to pay attention. The spot with top Dollar First Class going through the ladders, and AJ Francis really needs to learn how to take that spot, because he looked like he tried to curb stomp the ladder. Luckily, he went through like the holes and didn't break his knee, but he did. That was just dangerous. I didn't like that spot, to be honest with you, but. You know, I wanted First Class to win, but I kind of figured they wouldn't. I kind of figured the Hardys would win. Not the biggest fan of it, but it is what it is. And it is used to set up Bully Ray coming out, challenging the Hardys Hardys versus Team 3D one final time at Bound for Glory, which will be in Lowell, Massachusetts at the Zonga Center. And yeah, that's going to be something. That's either going to be one of the worst matches ever, or it's going to bring back nostalgia from childhood, right? That's what I think a lot of people want, right? So we then get to the main event, and this is where I want to sit for 10 or 15 minutes. Because the match, I'm just going to be honest with you, the match wasn't good. And I didn't expect it to be good. Here's why. A hot take. Trick Williams, Kara, I know you love the dude. He's not a good wrestler. His moveset is pretty bland. And definitely he has the chant, he has the look. 100% see where you're coming from the look category, right? He has the look. But he's not a wrestler by any means of the definition. And his moveset, you know, he's sort of like a John Cena. Very bland. Joe Hendry's the same way. And then you have Mike Santana, who is the hometown guy, gets this big entrance. The crowd's popped, crowd's ready. The bell rings, not the greatest match by any length of the imagination. Not the greatest match at all. Did not expect it to be. What I expected this to end with was a moment. And that moment was Mike Santana winning the title in New York, representing New York. Right? And so when that didn't happen, you immediately deflate how I feel about this show. I'm just going to be honest. Because leading up to this point right now, leading up to the main event, before the bell rings at the main event, I would probably give this show like a high 8 out of 10, right? I thought it was pretty good for what it was supposed to be. I thought a lot of the matches were good. Enjoyed a lot of it. 8 out of 10, right? We go through this match, and all I'm expecting is, all I care for is a Mike Santana victory. I don't care if the match was the worst match ever wrestled. Because, again, it's not about the match to me. It's about the story, and it's about the moment. And what I felt the story was, up to this point, was yes, TNA getting their title back, but you've built, everyone expected it to be Joe trying to redeem himself, but instead the redemption comes through Santana, and this would have just made a moment out of it. Made Santana the biggest babyface in the company. But instead, you keep the belt on Trick. I don't know where you go from here. Like, this should have, like I understand there's going to be this old school Vince McMahon thinking where, well, the babyfaces never win in their hometown. And you're not wrong. That's a Vince McMahon idea. That's how booking typically. But this isn't even about that. TNA pulled another TNA. They TNA'd again. What do I mean by that? They make a decision that's completely contrary to the layup that was right in front of their face. They tried too hard. And again, this goes back to what I was saying. TNA loves to run these long-term pushes for their baby faces. They did it with Joe Hendry last year, where Joe probably should have won the title at Slammiversary last year. We thought he would probably win it at Bound for Glory last year. Did not have that happen, and we had to wait another 3 months till January I forgot the name of that one, where Joe Hendry finally did win the title, but it was about 6 months late, right? The metal was steaming hot, right? Like, you could have formed Mike Santana into championship material. You have a story. He's going to be the savior of TNA. He's going to bring the title back, and he's going to do it in front of his hometown. This is the easiest layup. This is you just stole the ball in defense. No, they defense ain't getting back in time. You have an open lane, easiest layup shot you'll ever get in your life. And instead of pulling the layup, you shoot the three. And it missed. It missed. This completely deflated the crowd, me, a lot of other people who watched the product. You had an opportunity here, TNA. And you just couldn't get out of your own way. It's one of those things, right? It's one of those things that, okay, well, this is why TNA has never beaten or gotten close to being on the same level as WWE. And I don't want to try to be tribalistic, but as some of these booking decisions, okay, yeah. We ain't got to worry about them overtaking WWE. Now, let me just be honest. This felt like a Triple H booked match. I'm just going to be completely honest with you. First off, it has its formula. It's a triple threat. It's his favorite formula for matches is put people in triple threats. You know, Teddy Long had a tag team match against The Undertaker. Triple H has, let's just make it a triple threat. But, yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't see how you go from here. You just deflated, I think, any momentum Mike Santana had. And I get it's the same process with why JC Jane's holding the NXT and the TNA women's belts. You want to try to be like, hey, look, Trick Williams is a superstar. He's our champion. Let's get a TV deal. But at the same time, like, I think Mike Santana has some believability as champion. I think he could. Is he going to draw as much as Trick did? Probably not. But I don't know. I'm just not the biggest fan of this decision. Mike Santana should have clearly won that match. Like, you had a layup in front of you, TNA. You had a layup in front of you. Now, the haters will say, well, the WWE's running the show. Why did you expect Santana to win? WWE's running the show here. It's NXTNA. Maybe you're right. Maybe in 6 months we'll look back and be like, yeah, they were right. But maybe they're not. Maybe this was just a decision to try to get a TV deal. Who knows? Maybe, again, this is long-term push to get Trick into Bound for Glory. And have Santana win it at Bound for Glory. I know what would make the story interesting. It's in Lowell, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. There's a guy on the main roster, WWE, that's not really being used that has some history with Trick Williams. Would it not be poetic justice to bring Carmelo Hayes back and cost Trick Willie the title? In Lowell, Massachusetts. Which I think is the same building that Trick Williams turned on him, on Mello. I could be wrong. Vengeance Day 2024 was when it happened. Let me. Oh no, that was in Tennessee. Okay, I was wrong. That was in Tennessee. But either way, like, would it not be interesting to see Trick Williams get, you know, reignite that feud? Maybe take it to the main roster? Because Carmelo cost Trick Williams the championship. I think that would be pretty cool. But that's just me overbooking things. But yeah, overall, again, it's probably like a 7 out of 10 show. I'm not a big fan of the ending. I think the one thing, I'm just going to be honest, the one thing that TNA really isn't hitting on is the women's division. Their men's division is stacked. And so here's where I think the partnership should take the next step. TNA should be used as developmental. Hey, we got these NXT women who can't have time on TV, right? A lot of times we're sending them like Nikita Lyons to Evolve, and Nikita Lyons just needs to get a pink slip. But some of these younger women, instead of going to Evolve, where no one's really watching them, some of the more talented up-and-comers that don't have a lot of opportunity right now in NXT, send them to TNA. They need a women's division there. Because you have, what, Masha, the Elegance Brand, the Inspiration, Indy, Tessa, Danny Luna, Jody Threat. So you got, like, 8 women. I think Savannah Evans is part of the roster. So you got 9, 10 women. I think there's some NXT women that could definitely be used, you know, that aren't in the main picture right now. Like, imagine a... I'm trying to think of someone there. Can't think of anyone off the top of my head that's not being used on NXT right now. I can't, and I also don't, I don't remember her name. Is it Tyra Mae Steele, the girl who won LFG season 1? She's on Evolve. No one's watching that. Send her to Evolve. Or send her to TNA. Send like a Lainey Reed or a Carmen Petrovich to TNA to run 3-4 months like on loan like they do in soccer. Hey, we'll loan them for a season and then bring them back for their development. That way they can get reps. Because to me, if you're not in front of the camera wrestling and getting used to that, right, and keeping your name in the presses, essentially, right? And so that's just me. I think you need to build that women's division up. I think everything else you're really knocking out of the park. I'm just going to be honest with you. Maybe some more tag teams. It's not a lot. But you know, someone like High Rise, like Wes Lee's group, could be like a feature on TNA where they get loaned to TNA. Like, I wish we would, you know, we have Ariana Grace and her dad, Santino, like playing around with, you know, Director of Authority, you know, the Miss NXT type thing. Like, do some loans, do some trading, not necessarily trading, but like, hey, NXT loans such and such to TNA. One thing I did like about TNA, they do an injury report during the show. I think that's really, really good. And I think WWE should use it. And I know a lot of people say, oh, they're stealing from TNA. I really think they should use it. Because it keeps people informed, but it also keeps, like, imagine having, like, an injury report. Kevin Owens had successful surgery on his neck this week. Expected to be out indefinitely. Or Seth Rollins had, you know, we hear about Seth Rollins' injury on Saturday night's main event. We come to Monday and we do an injury report. Seth Rollins is at the medical center. we'll keep you updated. And then you go through Dragunov and all the other, you know, Otis and all the other people that are injured. Maybe don't do everyone because you'd expose how badly injured your roster is right now. But yeah, I think the injury report is pretty cool. But with that, I ain't got much more to say. TNA Slammiversary 2025 was a good show. Thank you all for watching. Episode 300, we're going to celebrate with all y'all. Again, thank you all for watching, listening, sharing. Continue doing your thing. Here's to the next 100 episodes. We'll be at episode 400 before we know it. And until the next one on August 1st, when we do predict SummerSlam, and I promise that'll be the next episode. No more before then. Ain't got the time for it. But until then, y'all have a great rest of your day. And I will see you on August 1st.
So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay. Slapping meat wrestling every Tuesday.